there's no wrong death. If you're there, that's enough. Don't worry that you did something wrong. And I think that's a beautiful idea.
Hello and welcome to The Right Question, a radio program and podcast featuring authors from the American West and beyond. The Right Question is supported in part by Humanities Montana and members of Montana Public Radio, and by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. I'm Lauren Korn, speaking with poet Melissa Kwasny, author of The Cloud Path, a collection that reckons with grief and recovery. At the heart of this collection is Melissa's mother's passing, the caretaking, the sick and deathbed rituals, her mother's after. Meanwhile, the world is in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, and the natural world continues to be ravaged by us, our human population. It's a devastation, a physical decline, rivaled only by our divisive social tensions. The Cloud Path is a field guide for the living and an elegy for those we've lost and what we are currently losing. Melissa Kwasny is the author of 7 collections of poems, including The Cloud Path, Where Outside the Body is the Soul Today, Pictograph, and The 9 Senses. Melissa is also the author of Earth Recitals, Essays on Image and Vision, and she's edited multiple anthologies, including Toward the Open Field, Poets on the Art of Poetry, from 1800 to 1950, and with M.L. Smoker, I Go to the Ruined Place, Contemporary Poems in Defense of Global Human Rights. Melissa lives outside of Jefferson City, Montana, in the Elkhorn Mountains. Melissa, thanks for being here. Welcome back to The Right Question.
Thank you, Lauren. I'm so happy to be here and see you again.
Oh, I'm so happy to see you. I'm hoping we can begin our conversation with a reading. Will you read the opening titular poem of The Cloud Path?
The title poem?
The title poem.
Sure. The Cloud Path. Last night, my mother's dog woke me to find her drenched with sweat, passed out, as we say, unreachable. My mother, who refuses to wear her hearing aids, moves unhearing into her world, her own narrative interpretations. Passing through, as needles through fine or heavy cloth, as clouds over the mountain, they are more transient than us. Nuage en lambeau. Torn clouds. 6 friends have died. My father has died. My grandparents, 2 cats, a beloved dog. Passed away, a perfect phrase, for away is where they go. A quickness seen from the ground. And the past, which we often misuse or misspell. Blue on the cloud hem indicates pressure being released. A body on the downslope, misshapen, relative to what stays the same so long. Do you have moments, too, when you fear everything is sliding, that you are here on the melting ice edge of loss? Though the pond hangs on to its ice daily, dry leaves skipping across the surface, I love that it still holds our weight.
Melissa, The Cloud Path is so much about your mother's passing, her failing health, and dying alongside a coping through a pandemic and a continued loss of our natural world. And in another poem, Owl Nest, you write, "If we can imagine the worst beforehand, will it be easier when it comes?" How would you answer that question today? Does foreseeing loss, or gaining what you call later in the book, the skill of anticipatory weeping, does that soften the blow? And if it's not a softening, what does foresight allow you?
That's an incredible question. No, it doesn't help. It just creates more anxiety, right? But what I wanted to do in this book, and also what I'm trying to do in my life right now, is we see more and more loss. Because of my age, I'm seeing more and more loss. I'm losing friends. I've lost my parents. But also we're seeing so much loss and grief in the world, in wars, in the pandemic, in each other's lives. How to talk about that. What are the sources of healing for grief? How can we offer that to each other? Where can we find it? Those kind of questions are something that that I began asking when I started writing the poems in this book. What are the paths? There's lots of path poems in this book.
There are.
I have the cloud path, which is title poem, of course, because clouds are temporal, right? Mm-hmm. And they're temporary.
Yeah.
And they're transforming all the time, and sometimes they're gone. And of course, it's an obvious metaphor for our lives. But also, it's a path that we can learn from. And in the book, there's the lupin path, the cottonwood path, the aspen path. There's all these path poems where I found that I wasn't going to ask the question and the answer was the end of the path.
Sure.
But like as they say, like, what do you learn along the path? And what do the lupins have to teach you when you're walking that? What do the cottonwoods have to teach you? Because I've always found that the forms of nature want to help us to heal, that they're healing, not only physically, as in herbals or things like that, but psychologically and spiritually.
Sure. You even ask this question at the end of the book, did nature ever talk to you, teach you? And I want to return to that question maybe towards the end of our conversation, but I want to maybe ground our listeners, your readers, in the person who is at the heart of this book of poems. Tell me about your mother, Melissa.
Oh, okay.
Who she was, what your relationship to her was like as a child, as an adult, and then when she was passing.
Yes. I was very close to my mother, obviously. And so being with her as she was dying was tremendously difficult. I thought she deserved, like we all have this idea of the perfect death, right? Somebody falls asleep, and hardly anybody ever does that. But that's what I thought my mother deserved because she was such a pure being, and it didn't happen that way. So I was devastated, and also I learned a lot about myself and what I could do right and what I could do wrong during that process. My mother was a very psychic person. She was raised in the spiritualist church, which is kind of ecumenical church that believed in communication with the dead. And she was training as a young child. My grandparents had seances in their house, which was something in the early part of the 20th century that was a rural movement. I think in response to people, so many people losing family members in World War I and wanting that consolation. And so my mother, before she got married, was involved in that church. And she did not pursue that, but she was always kind of on another plane. And and so I was so skeptical when I was a teenager. In fact, at one spiritualist church meeting, when I think I was 12, the medium said, "There's someone in the back row with a big question mark over her head, and it's interfering with my communications."
And you're like, oh.
And I thought, I didn't say anything, but I thought, my mother's going to kill me. She's going to know it's me. But she was always a delight in that way because she wasn't afraid of death. She was a good teacher about how to be with people when they were in pain, or she was very calm presence.
So then, if she was a good teacher, what did you learn from her that you then brought to her deathbed?
Well, I think she was kind of training me how to do it. She called me when her mother was dying and said, you have to be here. And so that was my first experience with someone whom I loved dying. She called me when my father was dying, so I came and we went through that together. Then since then, I was very good with I've been with a number of people just by circumstance. And a lot of people do that, and a lot of people have never experienced that. I think that's something in our culture that in America that people are uncomfortable with it. They're uncomfortable with the suffering, but they're also uncomfortable with everything about it. And she made me feel not so uncomfortable with it. Why it was hard was I did everything right. We had hospice. She died at home. I administered all the drugs. I was there all the time, which hospice people tell you, there's no wrong death. If you're there, that's enough. Don't worry that you did something wrong. And I think that's a beautiful idea.
Yeah.
But I just sobbed through it because I'm a very emotional person, and I couldn't quite get the calm I could get in other situations.
But then your mother, there's a line in the book, your mother tells you to stop that.
It was the last word she said, Melissa, you've got to stop this. And it's in the book, it's in the poem where I was reading Moments of Being, Virginia Woolf, and she's a younger person when her mother dies, and she is called into the room, which is what, you know, at that time, children were just called into the room and then led back out. And I love that phrase, and I use it in that poem, hold yourself straight, little goat, her mother says to her, because she's all bent over in fear and grief. And her mother goes, buck up. And and I think that's what my mother was trying. She hadn't talked for a long time, but I could tell she was going, that's enough.
You're listening to A Conversation with Poet Melissa Kwasny. I'm Lauren Korn. This episode of The Right Question is supported by Elk River Books in Livingston, Montana, offering new, used, and rare books and frequent author readings in their lineup of events offered each season. A full events calendar and online shopping can be found at elkriverbooks.com.
Your publicist, in a kind of letter or note, wrote that the subjects of these poems are always reaching for the ecstatic. Hmm. How do you think about the ecstatic in poetry, Melissa? Is this a lineage or even a form that you're consciously writing into or around when you're writing poetry?
I don't think of that word in relation to my work. I think my work is always not only in the writing of it. Someone asked me at the reading in Helena the other day, does this, reading these poems, does that feel healing to you? And I said, no, the writing of the poems is what's healing to me. This is product now. it's not the act itself. And I think in the writing of the poems, what I'm searching for or where are those sources of healing, including like what lifts your heart? What makes you feel more connected to others? What makes you feel more connected to the earth? Those are the paths. Those are the avenues I'm trying to explore.
Yeah. I want to break that word down for you and our listeners. Ecstatic comes from ecstasis, right? Or ecstasis. It's a Greek word for standing outside of oneself. How does that resonate with you when thinking about the subjects and the lyric I in these poems?
I think that's interesting. I think that I'm always very excited when another voice comes through. And so I suppose one could think about standing outside yourself as being that kind of experience. I would like to think I am a conduit for the voices of, say, the pines, or the voices of different forms of non-human life that would like to have a voice through me, that I'm trying to be open to that in my own life. And so within the poems is usually where I feel like that happens. So in that way, I'm always searching for... None of us have everything to say. Like, I don't trust my voice to convey the richness and strength of the world. But there are so many other beings around me that I would like to access, to communicate with, and that can happen within the poem.
I'm hoping you might read Elegy on page 25.
Yes. I want to say one thing. The elegy, which is a tribute to someone who has died, not a eulogy necessarily, but it's an elegy is part eulogy and part grief, you know, expression of grief. But also in this poem, I read this book on the elegy that's really fabulous by Peter Sachs, and he tells you what should be in a traditional elegy. And so in this poem, I say, this is what should be in a traditional elegy, and then I try to do it.
I love it. So
you'll hear part of that in here. Elegy. Pine winds, my friends, please arrive at my gate. That she is not here, but that she was, seems unbearable. Send me a handbell for evening and one for dawn. My wish that we could all learn to evaporate. Google mother, death, angels, heaven, hell, assumption. Her neighbors brought bouquets to her sickbed in which the same flowers appeared, tea roses, hibiscus, and blue hydrangea. They brought their little dogs to cheer her, lifting them to her lap. She had quit eating a week beforehand, so fruit baskets only made her cry, as did a child's voice or any mention of the word hospice. Did we interrupt her soul's plan? Were we obstacles in its path, doling out drops of morphine until she slept? My brother turning clumsy, my sister looming large. It's okay, we kept repeating, when it was clearly not so. If we could have sung, but our family never sang. Once I sent my mother lilacs wrapped in wet newsprint to Florida, where it's too hot for them to grow, though it took over a week for them to reach her. Once she asked me for a photo that would represent her, but not of her. I took a picture of falling snow. Admittedly, the image wasn't clear. But this is how we talk to each other. I want to know more about dying than death, this side of it as distinct from that of mourning. Must it always be like hers was, a dark hallway strewn with broken glass? Can the scene ever be swept of dread? They say an elegy should include a catalog of flowers, a cast of mourners, repetition of the deceased name, anger and accusation, though performed in a measured pace, one that follows the progressive drama of the seasonal gods. My mother seemed to live in a different world than ours. Her prayer jars by the dog treats, hidden in plain sight, her journals never shared, her thoughts unwinding in spools of words we couldn't follow. Still, we came to her with our questions. She was the oracle of our late nights. Perhaps my father was jealous he couldn't reach her. Perhaps that's why he hid her, though that was never her story, only mine. Perhaps her death was filled with light and chimes.
You write in that poem, did we interrupt her soul's plan? I'm curious how you view this collection, The Cloud Path, alongside your previous collection, Where Outside the Body is the Soul Today. Both are grappling with this idea of the soul, what happens to a soul in death or after death. Would it be at all correct to say that your previous collection is almost theoretical, whereas The Cloud Path is empirical? It's this application of those theories.
I love how you read. You read so carefully. It's really fun to be with someone who's reading so carefully and making connections across work. I really appreciate that.
I'm so glad.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun to read your work.
I do think that's true. I think whatever kind of relationship you have with your mother, or anybody has, it's the big loss. We're made of them, and we feel it in ways that we don't intellectually know. Lots of people have said that, and I'm just repeating that, but I think it's one of the truths. And the previous book, which was an exploration of that idea, what is the soul, that was inspired by a book by the poet Christopher Howell, who had written a couple poems called A Letter to the Soul and Another Letter to the Soul. And that task I saw as a challenge, but also kind of ridiculous. Like, what is the soul anyway? Like, we use that word. What does it mean to me? What do I even think about that? So I thought, I'm going to try that. And you think, I'm going to write a letter to the soul. What would you ask? What would you say? And what are you going to confide? So that was an interesting imaginative experiment for me. And as I say in the book, I found out that where I could most access the soul was outside myself, seeing it in other people, seeing it in nature, in encounters. In this, that question that comes up in the poem that you mentioned is one I think people who work with hospice, if your family uses it, everyone I think has a moment where they go, is this morphine killing them? And they would say, no, they're dying already. Right. It's, you know, you don't get morphine if you're not dying. Mm. I've been volunteering for hospice for about a year and a half now.
Wow.
And reading a lot about it since my mother's death, and that kind of idea of palliative care, but also of hospice. But there used to be the idea that the good, you know, whatever the good death is, was something that that you suffered through. It's a very Christian idea that you, the good death is one that you struggle through because you're struggling through your life and remorse and anything like that.
Guilt, shame.
Guilt, yeah. And yeah, all those things. But a good death wasn't one where you didn't. and we have that idea that, you know, if you have pain, you suffer pain. You don't, like, escape pain. And we have a quite different idea about that now, that we don't want to see people suffer, right? Mm. But there's still that question, like, is this a spiritual process of dying? Well, if you believe life is, then probably dying is too. Are you interrupting it? And soul or spirit or whatever you say about that. I don't believe that now. We want to make people, as we don't want to watch people in pain. I certainly don't.
You write in the last section of your book, we don't often ask the right questions of each other. And you pose a number of questions to follow that. And while I think this collection, The Cloud Path, may be a long-form answer to each of these questions, I thought it would be something akin to fun or something like levity, to have kind of a lightning round with you in these questions, asking you your own questions. And feel free to keep them brief or, you know, as long as you want them to be. But have you ever had a supernatural experience?
Yes, I think of supernatural as it's like when they said surreal is the real plus, that supernatural is the natural plus. Mm. And so lots of encounters feel like that to me.
Mm-hmm. What has hurt you the worst?
I think my mother's death.
Did nature ever talk to you, teach you?
I think most of my poems reflect that.
Who do you miss the most?
That's a tie between my mother and my grandmother.
If you have one, what is the sound of your prayer?
Might sound like that.
Those were good answers. I have one more question for you, and I want to come back to your mother. How has your mother's death, the loss of her, how has that changed you as a person?
On a personal level, I'm lonelier. It's directed me to learn more about how to be as calm as she would be and to be as helpful as she would be. I'm not there yet. That's why, you know, I'm doing hospice training. I'm in a palliative care group. I've been reading a lot of things. You know, you ask those questions. Some of the questions, mine are a little tweaked in that poem, but they go, have these conversations with people if they want to have them. You know, have them with each other. Like, what was important in your life? What was your favorite animal encounter? You know, to ask of each other, to try to learn how to do that, to have more meaningful conversations with people, especially toward the end of their lives. But maybe we should do that more often.
Yeah, all the time.
All the time.
Melissa, thank you so much for joining me today, and thank you so much for The Cloud Path. I so enjoyed my reading experience of it.
Thank you. Thank you. This wonderful interview. Love how deeply you read this book and sensitively, and the questions were amazing.
That was poet Melissa Kwasny, author of The Cloud Path, out now from Milkweed Editions. Look for more information about Melissa at mtpr.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. You've been listening to The Right Question. This episode was produced by Chris Moyles and me. I'm your host, Lauren Korn. Chris also engineered this episode. The artwork for The Right Question was designed by Molly Russell, and our music was written and recorded by John Floridis. Funding for The Right Question is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. Many thanks to Humanities Montana for supporting this program since 2008, and thank you for listening. The Right Question is a production of Montana Public Radio.